Thank you, Senhor.
Yes, I think.
The council of the
Dean,
One other critique, if I may, of Astral Support is that it is, in its main needs, is very weighted towards the ESI type activities. Whereas we're more talking about the related needs of ESI. And that leads into the discussion you had with the Valor this morning about what the airport would like to coordinate with the airline in terms of the kind of activity that would be appropriate in a non-ESI type location but still close to the airport.
Just picking up on that point, certainly start with workers of a complementary activity as car park. Would that mean as a special zone for them? Would a car park need a resource consent under the rural zone?
It probably would, because it would presumably be commercial in one way or another, and it would need a form of consent as a commercial. And that would probably be discretionary or non-compliant. I need to look at the rules for that.
And in terms of the garage room where the church is serviced, have you got any information about who is the airlines? So if they get to decide where they're going to fly them.
Is
that QFC for you or the airline for you?
Not the airline, the airline that's informed by anyone. You say you're asking whether the airline might walk with the flight directly on.
You build it if you want surface. The airlines are going to come and we're a match and they're actively saying that they would in any buildings. What's your view? Is this building the way to come?
Well, the thing to be conscious of is that a lot of those discussions which try to get articulation in public are really discussions about landing charges and drag. I know this because I actually get bored. And so we need to be a little careful about assuming what the airline's position really is in terms of their services, or whether they are positioning themselves for a conversation about the commercial arrangements to be had between the airport itself and the airlines about what they're going to be charging the use of the program. So I just feel cautious about
fair point, you're right, the notoriously hard nosed negotiations. Question for you. I listen with interest to your deciding the definition of airport related activities. And the proposition I want to put to you was that it seems very loose. It seems to cover a multitude of activities with anything from a stroll to a post connection to if your operation tends to be a vital economy.
So what they like to call it?
A qualitative economy. How strong is this in the industry?
I agree it's fairly broad, but there's a lot of things here that are reasonably specific. Service to provide support to an airport, and it lists a whole bundle of things, all of which are fairly specific. I think generally, the looser aspect of that definition is the retail and commercial services and industry associated with the needs of airport passengers, visitors and employees, and or aircraft movements and airport businesses. That's broad, but I still think it's getting the message across, and then a couple of objective and the policies, a couple of which I cited in the coming documents. Policy 17 is to ensure land use is included in the policy, we have a legitimate relationship with the and so on. So between the objectives and policies and the definition, they're sending a pretty clear message.
But again, the legitimate government had a qualitative aspect that could be very low. That any sort of connection would be a legitimate connection.
Well, for example, the list of activities that the QAC cited to the bells always seems like pretty legitimate connections to me, including the accommodation one.
Like, you know, I said the point of my questions is the definition allows for a whole range of activities that while servicing the airport and its employees could serve the rest of the district.
Or quite possibly, yes. But they in doing that, and doing the former of it by servicing the airport employees, they still need an airport location.
And the other aspect that occurs to me is the larger the amount of space provided in the zone relative to the actual airport demand, the more pressure there will be to use that growing space for activities that are actually at the margin that are more visible toward the external customers than to the airport customers. The definition doesn't seem to prevent that.
Yes, quite possibly, and that's why I'm in support of the non-complying category, so that there would need to be some fairly careful analysis of what's actually meeting the definition and what's not. And I think if there was any application being made, it would be incumbent upon any applicant to actually be proving why they meet that definition. And to me, they'll need to be demonstrating a legitimate link in one way or another.
And the last point arising out of your 212. Well, I'll go back to 210. One last point on this. So, we're prepared for services to reach people, readers, services, and visitor accommodation. I want to focus on the last. Visitor accommodation at airports. Because it seems to me that choice was visitor accommodation at existing or through the bridge. Yes. Hopefully that was in Christchurch, now Queenstown. But the only other airport in New Zealand I could think of was because of accommodation on site is Hamilton. And so I'm thinking, what's a comparable airport with Wellington? But I don't think any of the, those other examples are comparable with Wellington.
No.
I had a question on that too, and I'm sure that you might actually require a personal wife well. So she asked you about simple accommodation, but just in terms of the function that the previous year, people from that activity, can you, in a wider context, comment on some of those options?
Okay, this is a recommendation. No, I can't think of a comparable airport. I think Queenstown would be the most comparable, but Queenstown has a lot of land around it that is sanitized by the inward boundary and the air control boundary. I don't think there's much land inside the airport land itself that isn't within the OCD. And with the air noise controls created by that Plan Change 26, there is that section of JBI on land which is outside of the out of control boundary. Much, much land within it, so there is that section around Mount Barker Road that's outside it. I'm not familiar with Hamilton Airport, but certainly Auckland comes with international hotel outside of Hamilton themselves. Your question, Commissioner Hudson, just to make sure I've got it right, the broader functions of airport related activities at other airports.
I'm asking whether you're able to provide us with a comparable airport. So,
well,
of course, I'm not talking about the figure, I'm talking about reasonable type of airport.
And Nelson, if you run the later train, of course, attached to the Nelson. That would be one.
I think most regional airports have a level of these sorts of activities going on. They've all got, they all tend to have the ones that I'm not over the committee, but I've been through them. They all have some freight, they all have some region cars, they all have some level of cafes and so on, which will relate to serving the passengers and to the other functions of the airport. And all of those airports, I'm sure, would like to grow because every town wants to get more people for its stores. And surprisingly, the number of airports around it have international in their heading as well, because they want to get some train passengers flight.
The impact of this initial airport comes to mind. In terms of your description of 212 road strategy for airports, I'm getting the sound to the road off of an airport with the state highway limit, actually state highway goes with the limit.
Well, I'm more thinking, say, Queenstown, which has State Highway 6 very close by, and there are airport activities established in Glenda Drive, which have to go all the way around the State Highways and get to the airport. There's both the regional car companies in Glenda Drive and the industrial area. and I think there's a catering business there as well. And that's all because there's not that much room in the airport itself. And I think Auckland's got a highway going through it because there's a lot of airport related activities that extend well beyond the immediate environment of the airport. And I think that's an amazing K road once you reach the last 7 miles down there, but not on the K road.
Are you referring to
that section of the road that goes towards Pakistan? No, the main one going through, but unfortunately these days is lined with American fast food joints on your right. And that's, I think that's the lady coming all the way through to the real world road works that happen. But I know there's, a lot of activities well past the airport, but when you get into that larger industrial area, along George Bob Drive, there's a lot of logistics and there's the quarantine, there's a lot of rental cars, rental vans and so on and so forth, they're all in that big industrial area. So they'll make that airport related activity as well.
Yeah.
Yes, in the summary sense.
First of all, for some good order, presumably the numbers is 75 bread and should be moved from the crosshole with the small grass.
Yes, I should have said that right from the start. Yes.
That should be.
So A1 is 10, A2 is 12, and A3 is 7.
And while you're there on that page, 17514C, should that be A3? And if it's L3, what does that mean?
Oh, yes, A3. Yep, correct.
And lastly, go to 17014A. Confirm that that cross reference should be 17517.
Yes, it should. Correct.
The general market, we have 27810-1. I was wondering what happened if there's no subdivision. Does that mean the net department in the council?
A good point, that's not definitely not an issue. I had imagined that the probably the only way this would ever be developed would be through by way of subdividing first and lots would be created and sold off. But if that wasn't the case, then perhaps that will need to read that at the time of the first subdivision to create lots or the first development within the structure plan area, then those items need to be created. So there's two triggers. I wouldn't be surprised if the latter ever happened, but you're right, it's under the rules that would be a possibility.
Yes, I would be surprised too, but it's strange to have that.
I'm not sure the one here. Thank you.
15 things that I can check.
So the schedule is the greater efficiencies, but that will depend on the activity and the type of traffic generated. And as Mr. Carr said, there are some very low generating related and then some high ones. That was just 44,000 square metres through to 88,000. There's 880 versus some other numbers. So, in reliance on his evidence, I think there are compatibilities or integration to that extent. But if it gets there too much, then it would interaction between the two, the integration will start to become inefficient. So there is a level at which it's fine, but above that it's starting to be inefficient, and that's why we've got some rules in place to deal with that.
Going back to your evidence relating to the amount of building coverage that the zone would enable, it's 5.5 BCs or 35,000 BCs. What in your experience does that amount to? I've got questions, Mr. Carr, I was trying to get some sort of sense of the scale of that amount of building, relative to the function and the size of the airport. Yes, we've got to look ahead with zoning is all about the future, not the present. And your view is, how much capacity would 55,000 square metres amount to? If you have to put them in the porch, you may not.
We had really the once we've discounted the landscape type provision like setbacks and landscape protection, roading and so on, then what is a feasible buildable area, and is that practical? Yes, it is, because of the nature of the land. And is your question getting at, is that probable? Probable? Yes. Well, over what time scale to achieve a full building? I would think way more than the life of the district plan. Certainly I think in the life of the district plan it would be well underway, given the conversations that the QOC's had developed and the kind of activities that they would like to see there now. But the build out would be it could be bullet. I'm speculating, but the actual report would have a 40-year horizon. I might think we could be talking about that as an absolute maximum, I would have thought, given my critique of their report, which is about airport. It seems to be more about airport activity itself, as opposed to airport-related activities. It could be that with what airport related activities might happen in the QSC land and what might happen on the valve land. Well, I think all I can say here is it would be more than the life of this district plan, and it might be more than the life of the next district plan. And just then I'm getting pretty sick of it.
Okay, going to your visitor accommodation, in your opinion, is visitor accommodation within the proposed zone going to provide an adequate level of amenity to the occupants?
Well, we're outside of the 55, the out of control boundary, and that's, as I would understand it, the line at which amenity values are okay for this sort of activity. And they're even okay for residential activity, but certainly for VA.
The zone provisions would allow mixed for that activity, and if it could be made, for example, logistics.
Yes, I see exactly your point, and I agree with that. I still think it's appropriate, but it would probably need to take its own measures, and perhaps any prospective developer of such VA would need to think about that in terms of the site they're buying, where it is in the site and where other things might be located around it, so that there's adequate buffers and so on.
So you're relying on the developer of a facility like that taking appropriate measures. What if this is provided and the VA gets to first and then the district comes along and
Another way would be to set some specific rules for the VA for a greater setback from the boundary of their site, for example. So that instead of there being 5 metres from their boundary or whatever it might be, it might need to be 15 or 20 to give adequate room for space and noise attenuation and also for some planting to sort of mitigate any visual effects.
How
do you deal with noise attenuation? Well, distance is one way of dealing with it. Acoustic measurement, acoustic measures in buildings itself.
Do you know whether they apply in the rules
of the proposed
thing? Or would they need to be incorporated?
If we were talking about something inside the in out of control boundary of the Inuit family, I'm pretty sure there are some control over that, but we're not talking about that. I'm more thinking about the relationship between the VA in the zone and say a little bit of filling or something else.
I think you're referring to the internal design criteria.
Yes.
Often apply in areas where noise is quite high.
I understand that
type of mechanism is available.
Yes, it is. I don't think there is some general rule in this plan that would we could easily just rely on. If there's going to be something like that, it would actually need to be in this zone. So I need to I need to think about that, what that would be.
Well, my recollection is that there isn't an internal rule set that the provisions produced by human secretary is sufficient. So if there is a standard that applies within the zone rather than the zone boundary, then something has to be denied.
I'd like to turn that to paragraph 20 of your summary statements, where you refer to policy 17.2.2.3, which refers to only now retail and food and beverage facilities designed and operated. The other has a garden intensive food visitors, etc. This is something raised by the chair, but I haven't got that as a question. In your opinion, is a possible development scenario a strip of individual retail slash cafe type facility?
No, I couldn't see that. It could be a couple, but if they're designed and operated to serve the citizens as passengers and workers, the market would self regulate, because to be true to that policy, there would only be one, maybe two.
So how would the How would the council assess whether or not such activity makes the policy?
Sorry, you're at 17.5.10, identified airport related activities, maximum gross floor area. The following activity shall not exceed 100 square metres from GFA, part of any single activity, cafes and other food and beverage facilities, retail activities and offices. So if that applies across the zone, so it's, as I said, that's not a something that's structurally clear, so your question applies right across that. It applies right across the zone, and I wasn't involved in the Stream Act, I think it was, hearings when those rules were figured out, but that is the council rule, and that's the council policy that we're adopting, and I'm supporting. I go back to my original statement, I think it would be self-regulating. I think it's marked there for passengers, visitors, and others who are there for a legitimate equal purpose, then these sorts of activities may crop up.
Time for that level of thought, but do you want me to reserve leave for supply saving? And if so, what do you want me to be coming?
Well, I think Mr. Brown needs to come to a view about whether what he's talking about within the site standard of the design, or whether what he's talking about is an acoustic performance standard for habitable rooms of the VA accommodation. I have a suspicion that the latter is going to be a simpler and more effective approach, because that is how noise contour rules work in relation to activities that are located in the contours. And it may simply be easier to adopt the standard that would apply within the OCB, outside of the OCB. So an appropriate standard of acoustic protection for habitable rooms is short. And that will also future-proof the site too, because the OCB boundaries should get out of the ship and get the VA numbers for the government. You can't do that. We're not in making an intolerable work environment for the people who stay at the VA and the OCB
logic. What am I saying? Yes or no?
Dulled my interest in that. That would be a very tidy way of doing it. Is that any VA would need to meet the internal requirements for buildings inside the OCB even though they're outside, because there's rules there that leads us.
May have protected you. I regard this as a waste of means issue, but I want somebody else to do the words.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Do you have any
I might say by the end of the day, but yeah, tomorrow.
5 o'clock tomorrow. Okay. We'll have to be finished.
Okay. Here we go. Outcome if you are not satisfied that the rural living zone gives can control effects on landscape areas. So we boil down to some fairly simple propositions here. But what I wanted to get across to you in my legal submission is that React has an inherent bias towards the least interference with the right to use the land. So although Mr. Barr's report expressed a preference for the rural zone of neighbours to come to rest by a greater control of his view, that is the wrong test. The better question for you to answer is, does the rural living zone provisions give the council sufficient control to achieve the landscape objectives of the plan? And so, the evidence that Mr. Espy identified for you what the landscape issues are, and the planning evidence from Mr. Vivian examines the rural living zone control, and now seems to satisfy you that those controls are sufficient to address the landscape issues. We do not understand there will be any outstanding issues in relating to things like natural hazards, geotech, traffic, that kind of stuff. So we simply haven't called any of that evidence. We understand those matters to be under controversy. It's a case about whether the landscape effects are able to be managed adequately through the rural living zone provisions. So, hoping that that is a sufficient preface to the evidence, we may move on. Well, I think it makes sense for Mr. Espy to come first. We haven't produced pictures of the site in terms of the evidence, but my recollection is that you've been there and observed the location of the plane on our side, and I can talk to you about the evidence that we've worried to you. So we had to rely on mobile and produce a whole new set. Right, Ben.
Just a few questions. I didn't just read out the summary of the questions from there. So, I'll skip my paragraph 3. In summary, I agree with and adopt the findings of the 4th Landscape and Visual Assessment Report, in section 0015, that accompanied submission 8.4. I consider that the location of the requested rural lifestyle zone has not had sensitive to change in many locations within the rural zone. I also consider that the landscape and visual effects of the requested rural lifestyle zone will be well mitigated, and there is considerable logic to the proposal in terms of landscape planning. I consider that the requested rural lifestyle zone sits comfortably in the landscape and in relation to landscape planning principles and relevant strategic or district-wide provisions of the operative, and that should be proposed district plans. The evidence of Liz Meltoff and the further submission of the Environmental Society both oppose the requested area of rural lifestyle zone on the ground of landscape and visual effects. I consider that neither the Council or the Society have conducted a suitable detailed assessment of the effects of development that would be enabled by the requested zone, and have not suitably considered the control or discretion that the consent authority will have in relation to the manner in which the zone ultimately develops. Subdivision within the requested area of rural livestock zone is discretionary, pursuant to the proposed district plan, and controlled pursuant to the operative district plan. With reference to subdivision consents granted in areas of rural lifestyle zone over the last decade under the operative district plan, i.e. in relation to controlled activity statement, it's common for conditions of subdivision consents to include numerous measures to mitigate potential effects of future buildings and activities. Common measures include specific landscape planting, division of screen or soften building platforms, the preparation of an overall structural landscape plan, and a suite of restrictions on the future design of buildings, external roofing, cladding materials, colours, finishes, the requirement for ease of windows, etc. The relief that is sought includes additional measures in order to mitigate potential effects. These additional measures have been added since the time of the original submission, as is detailed in the evidence in this video. In short, additional provisions are proposed that will ensure the following: a maximum of 25 dwellings within the requested zone. Buildings will be restricted to a maximum of 6 metres height. Activities within the zone will be reasonably inconspicuous when viewed from State Highway 6 through the use of a number of design units. The building restriction areas will be comprehensively managed so as to maintain and enhance indigenous vegetation and ecosystems in these areas. In her rebuttal evidence, Ms. Melsop opined that development that would result from the requested zone would have at least a moderate effect on landscape character, obviously, and that effects would be cumulative if those of the existing rural lifestyle zones were west of Mount Barker. I agree that the requested relief would reduce rural pastoral character within the site of the requested zone. Areas of rural lifestyle zone generally develop a more busy and fragmented character in agricultural areas, although they often accommodate some hobby farming activities. This is the case with various existing areas of rural lifestyle zone in the district. In terms of landscape planning, I do not see that this is an inherently inappropriate outcome, provided that the areas of rural lifestyle zone are located appropriately. Obviously, the strategic or district-wide provisions of the proposed plan and operative contemplate and provide for areas of rural lifestyle zones in rural parts of the district. A number of rural lifestyle zones are located within outstanding natural landscapes, including newly proposed areas of rural lifestyle zones that form part of the modified proposed district plan. I consider that the location of the requested rural lifestyle zone is appropriate because it's not within outstanding natural landscapes. It's on relatively flat terrace land and therefore, while it gains excellent solar access and views, is not as visually displayed or conspicuous as sloping land would be. It's located on improved pasture land and is part of a relatively intense farming operation, i.e. the land is not as high in natural character as many parts of the district. While it has good access to transport network, it is not located in the part of the upper Cooper Basin that experiences high use, traffic or tourist use, i.e. it is in a relatively hidden part of the basin away from most transporters. Its location and aspect is very similar, although more hidden in my opinion, to land that has already zoned rural lifestyle zone to the west of Mount Barker. And as it's set out in Mr. Smith's report, future development within the requested zone will have limited visual effects. I do not agree that the effects of development within the requested rural lifestyle zone would significantly combine with effects of the existing rural lifestyle zones in the west of Mount Barker to create a cumulative effect. In my opinion, the two areas of zoning would be well separated by the distinct spur that is followed by the Crippled Diggins track and by Mount Barker itself. I do not consider that the two areas of zoning will combine in the perception of an observer, albeit that they may be experienced sequentially by a traveller on Mount Barker Road. I consider that the effects of the two areas of zoning will be experienced quite differently. In her rebuttal evidence, Ms. Nelson opined that the visual effect experienced from space time 6 will be of a moderate degree. Mrs. Smith's report described these effects as being slightly different, and I agree. These views are at distances of between 2.8 and 4.4 kilometres, and the requested zone area appears as small and relatively inconspicuous horizontal sliver of land at the base of the critical range. Instances of built form are likely to be discernible, but will be visually softened by vegetation within the zone. I consider that the visual amenity as experienced from this highway will vary much from the main as it currently is. In his rebuttal evidence on behalf of the Environmental Society, Mr. Howard states that the Society supports Ms. Nelsop's view, but doubts that the relevant area has any capacity to absorb change. Mr. Howard does not explain the Society's position in the first place. Ms. Lucas, the landscape witness called by the Society, does not mention the proposed critical flash in the last zone in her evidence. The sort of visual maps and so on are attached to this first report and reproduced by some seeds. It might be something about those, if there's a question about those.
Well, why is that one? Putting aside the theory of what the ROA program provides for, one of the things that's struck me personally as I tripped around the place is I've been looking for the rail zones that successfully incorporate the kind of principles that you've been talking about, and I juxtapose them in my mind with the RL zone to the south of Mount Barker, which you can see for miles around from every, actually from every elevated point we've been on, with a view in that direction. So I'm troubled by whether this is the difference between theory and practice. And I invite your colleagues. That's a very open question, but you can see that as they are troubles. But can we rely, for putting those pages, can we rely on the AL zoning commission to produce a quality environmental outcome for the reservation landscape piece?
Well, I go back to what I said almost at the start of the summary. I think you can, provided the location is true. And in this case, I think, in short, the location is true. Looking at the rural lifestyle zone to the west of Mount Barker, the existing rural lifestyle zone that has been developed, more or less the capacity, I understand, that rural lifestyle zone that is in Mount Barker. I think what you're saying, it's not sloping land at the toe of the cripple, and sloping in a way that is displayed really to the upper foot of the basin to the north of it.
It's not a great advertisement.
So, exactly, it's not a great advertisement. I think, as far as its location goes, if we set aside its topography for a minute, its location, I don't think, is a problem in itself, given that it's at the very south end of the upper Clutha Basin and quite peripheral from major highway routes and things like that, although it has a topographical problem in that it's on sloping land that's very visually displayed. So that existing zone, I think, has considerably more effect than the zone that we're talking about. But I guess I come back to the overall point that I have confidence that the rural lifestyle zone provisions can produce good landscape outcomes provided we get the location right. Provided a piece of land has the right characteristics.
Yeah, well, trespassing is Olivia's point. that's really the policy program, but the policy is stated is focusing on the location, knowing that some locations are in our RSO will be most effective.
Yeah, I think that's the basic point. Yeah, out in the rural landscape still district, there's some locations where the rural lifestyle zone will be appropriate because the provisions can control the pests properly, and there'll be some locations which are not appropriate.
And in terms of the sensitivity of this area, would I be correct to conclude that the upper terrace is more sensitive because it's hard again up against the RML boundary than the lower terrace?
Well, if you came to this site, in first principles, I think that's a good overall first principle, but I think when you actually look at the land in detail, that upper terrace is not problematic because of that principle, because it has quite underlying topography. And it's not, again, going back to that existing rural lifestyle known as the Western Mount Park. This topography is not tilted so it's like the north. This evening is a little bit tilted in the other way, in other series. So I think when you actually examine the site, see in detail, that sensitivity is not a problem.
Our site was started at the western side of the terrace and of the upper terrace. Observed one of just a fellow stands with his feet in the air. Can you cut play off that sort of thing? And it struck me that your description accords with my understanding or my observation of the directions of the eastern ends of the upper terrace. But I'm not so sure about the western end, which according to space up what I cycle of this tape, my own portion of the photos, just like the reference of my body. I've got a photo with a clear outlook across that upper terrace from Smith Road, whereas the photo that I have of the other end, you're up, you can see the edge of the terrace which can't see anything behind it. So that's my impression as the writer comment.
Yeah, well, I think that's roughly borne out by the photographs in this research report that there is. The land of this upper terrace is variable. It's not uniformly displayed to the north. And given that we have a maximum of 25 dwellings over the entire zone, the dwellings are going to be relatively spaced. And of course, at subdivision stage in the rural lifestyle zone, you are required to identify a little bit at subdivision stage. And so the assessment of the location of the proposed building platforms forms part of the assessment of the subdivision application. And we deal with this application quite a bit, and we've been dealing with one of the owners being risk control over the last decade. And the council is not shy about having a moving building platform to the wrong place, nor should it. So that control over building platform locations is an important part of it. So again, I come back to the point that, well, I guess my overall conclusion is that I feel the provisions can bring about appropriate outcome on this piece of land.
And question about the small grass which you appear to be able to explore the turkey. RL, use the same question.
For an application?
Yeah, for us, an RL is a commercial application.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I don't know, let's say more than 15.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's easy to do itself, I suppose. That's all it's saying. You just, just go from the point as far as the outcome of the design will bring about, I think that's my question is appropriate.
Were they inside or not?
Yes, that's my understanding. Yes. So my question to you is, if that is the case, in your opinion, are the provisions of the rural zone capable of mitigating the effects of buildings or structures?
Well, yes, I think they are, and I guess I come back to this point that at the subdivision stage, the subdivision is discretionary and PDP, and part of the subdivision is how we by building platforms. And if we've got a maximum of 25 over the entire of the zone, they're relatively scattered, but there's a real living density there. I think that's one of the key controls is the location of building platforms. If the council uses this control or discretion at that point, then getting the building platforms in the right location is very important. Then after that, there are other controls, it's fully discretion, but under the operative district plan, you've been operating under the last 10 years, the council will often require, every time requires a structural landscape plan. And the idea of that is to locate and specify large scale structural tree planting or shrub planting that's to occur in order to help mitigate the effects of future buildings. And so obviously that plan is formulated once the building platform location has been chosen. So the landscape is specific to the building platform locations. Then there's often controls on external materials and colours, sometimes roof pitches, sometimes things like non-reflective glass or eaves over windows and this sort of thing. So I think all of those combined, particularly the location building sections, all of those combined will bring about people to the site.
While we're having a discussion with Mr. Easley, I had not marked on the plan where the vacant tents are located. And as luck would have it, they are located in an area that Mr. Easley has excluded from buildings. Can I have the public explain that for you? And can you show Ben, since we've asked him this?
Yeah, so just having seen that, that area that where those two are located, I'm looking at the zone plan that's attached to Mr. Smith's report as part of submission. Yeah, certainly in overall, the building restriction area has been drawn not to cover garden, but to cover parts of the terrace that are visually displayed. So that's one of those areas that's been excluded from the village.
One other question relating to the size of the buildings and mitigation of the visual effect, does it run contrary to the what people actually want to build to have a building that's usually more facing. That then would be screened from the northern aspect in order to mitigate it. So the visual impact.
Yes, well that's right. I don't think it needs to be screened from the northern aspect. I think it needs to be vegetation occur at a subdivision stage that ensures no building is completely common and is sitting out in the part of the zone where it shouldn't be, and that's the location of buildings that can be controlled primarily. I think, landscaping that would need to be done at the stage would be landscaping that attempts to visually tie buildings into a pattern over the entirety of the zone. There's also this requirement to manage the building restriction area in a way that brings about ecological maintenance and enhancement. And so landscaping may well sort of visually tie buildings into the vegetation that occurs in those building restriction areas. But I don't think there needs to be landscaping, high landscaping really, to the immediate north of the houses. And I think the reason that it doesn't make clear is because of the way the design has been configured, its location and the configuration of the building restriction area. Buildings will be not entirely invisible, but they'll be quite inconspicuous in my opinion.
Yesterday we heard from another submitter, and wasn't referring to the rural lifestyle area next to the Bell property, but he did talk about the existing development on the lower slope above the commercial land. A constellation of stars, isn't it? What is it that, in your opinion, that sort of effect might result from the post-rural lifestyle zone implication?
Yeah, well, I think that sort of description probably does apply to that area to the west of Mount Barker, and I say that prime rounds to do with the fact that it's sort of tilted to the north topographically, so all the houses are completely displayed. I think the proposed zone would be much less displayed, and so it's light and much less line of sight for individual dwellings. And so therefore, there's less of a constellation to look at. Again, I don't think buildings will be entirely invisible, and I don't think they need to be entirely invisible. If you're at a particular point at night and you look to the south, you will see some points of light.
Yeah,
I believe you will, but I don't see the provisions, the strategic provisions, or the district wide provisions saying that that's inappropriate.
Which is the delta for the analysis of the large district view of the college facility, having a CS college as well. You can emphasize the question of the location of building platforms. Maybe just take on the existing or the more people opposed to all have the discretion to refuse a building platform for that way that you might have subdivided a lot and no consent of all building platform, or is there either a law or a practice have the a building platform identified somewhere in a consented lot?
Well, I guess consented lot is
a proposed lot.
Of course, somebody will be coming along with subdivision consent application that proposes a bunch of lots and proposes building platforms on each of them. Now, under the control activity regime that we've been working under for the last decade or so, it's not uncommon, as I say, for through that resource consent application process, the council using its control to move building platforms and also to move property boundaries, proposed lot boundaries. So therefore, if there's a proposed lot, and let's say for argument's sake, there's no location on that proposed lot that suits the building platform, the council can require a lot to be reconfigured so that it does take it in the area that accommodates a suitable building platform, and the building platform gets moved into that. So the entire subdivision, property boundaries, lot configuration, building platform locations, that's all assessed as one, and there's control over a lot of it. So it can be reconfigured as its conditions or prior to current consent. But I guess it comes to the overall point that, in the big picture, does this design allow 25 locations to suitable building? I say yes, it does. So if the controls used properly, we can have 25 buildings here.
Conversing my experience sitting on the special subdivision chapter, those discussions were loud and long about the need to constrain council's discretion, as you said, suggestion put to reconfigure subdivisions. And the precursor was that subdivision had to be able to rely on a development yield. That panel has yet to finalise its views, as the has for all the panel. But certainly, the thrust of the submissions we hear suggested less rather than more control. And again, where I am is, can we rely on the kind of control you might identify being exercised, both being available and being exercised? Because, of course, both are critical.
Well, I guess I'd say from my perspective, from my area of expertise, I think there certainly needs to be at least the level of control that we've had under Cochrane Plan. Subdivision is controlled, and that is controlled through layout and building factors. And these are at least that level. Under the proposed district plan, it's proposed to all be discretionary, so there's more discretion available here. I think we need to relate that level of control and come back to this point that there's this maximum figure of 25 that's been applied to this area of zone, and I think that figure is right. I think we've got that figure right. I think if there were less than 25 suitable locations, then we'd need to adjust the figure, I think.
Yeah, Mr. Rethby, I just wondered whether you knew the basis on which the Western rural lifestyle properties were consented, i.e. were they consented under the controlled activity provisions of the OBG?
You mean the zones in the West?
The zones in the West, yes. If you don't know, that's fine, because I'll then want to put it to Mr. to provide them as much as I'm going to.
Well, certainly I've seen some. Under the operative discipline, I've seen some subdivisions under that zone and control exercise over building factory location and what have you. I think some of the subdivision might have been pre-existing before that zone became in place. But I guess an issue there, of course, is, like I say, the topography just isn't as good. So when the council's exercising its control, there's just not that much to work with there. But Ms. Lydia might know more on the history of that, but I've certainly seen some subdivisions under the popular district plan in that zone. But I think there's some subdivision that's older than that.
I teach Jack and Victor at the council, and this part of my reporting. From memory, there were two or three houses there. The rural lifestyle zone was developed through submissions to the Dale Creek area and the Mississippi Basin. They requested a zone for rural residential zone, and between one or two of the landowners, council decided that this new rural lifestyle zone. Council at the time, I think there was 210 zone requests and they approved all but one of them. So they went and certainly might have been the most appropriate location for sure.
Well, probably we need to ask the question in the good agreement, but if I may, at least leave it. In your opinion, being based on the controlled existence that. And yes, there are one of Bruce's comments about the topography of the business. What makes the post rural lifestyle zone for the Bow Land, what gives that the different places more rigor than what has applied to the rural lifestyle zone for the
West? Well, I think the rural lifestyle zone, if you compare the rural lifestyle zone to the operative provision, we're not repeating the rules, in terms of the objectives and policy, in terms of the rules, in terms of subdivision control, and the discretionary activities of the control. And even if you go through the rules on standards, there's a lot more teeth to them in terms of, for example, the residential density rules, specific to the rule of the rules. And previous cut under the operative plan, if you in the rural Russell zone, if you build within a building platform, it's controlled activity, if you don't, it's not on time. So it's quite black and white now. Now the rules are more aimed at if you achieve a density within the rural Russell zone, and you describe the energy cap, then you have the right for one to split in the building. I think that's certainly think it will make consenting. My opinion, the primary commission is raised by the commission the power that equipped the rural style zone provisions can avoid them in the landscape. Landscape and risk one into effect. I'll teach you when you need some subdivision activities that will be enabled by the equipped the rural style zone. Particularly issues include natural hazard fields and ecology and traffic, and then this is the trade set, those issues here. My evidence assesses the requested rural upside zone against the new regulatory legal criteria set out in the colonial Brindley versus Market District Council case. My evidence finds there's no impediment to accepting the requested lifestyle zone under this criteria. My evidence has assessed the requested lifestyle zone in terms of section 32 and finds on the basis of that analysis that the requested lifestyle zone is effective and efficient means of achieving the relevant objectives of that planning plan. And the requested lifestyle zone is the most appropriate zone for the project site. And it's in detail in paragraph 17. My evidence also directs part 2 of the Act. In paragraph 11.1, my state of mind is that contaminant decision. A broad overall judgment under part 2 of the RMA is not required when conflicting in consideration of CDIL submission. On further reflection, it's wrong to further my contaminant evidence and no longer consider this to be the case. In fact, I wish to withdraw paragraph 11.1 and 3 and substitute it with the new paragraph attachment I mentioned before. We need a paragraph clarify my opinion that the requested lifestyle zone achieves sustainable management and stress in the original 11.2 of my evidence. My evidence raises the number of issues to put the 42A report to the 2.6 star. Most significantly, at paragraph 10.1, the Smith Bar's recommendation recommended reason for rejecting JDIR's commission. The PDP rule zone is more appropriate than the restricted zone of rural lifestyle over the area because the rural zone has the most appropriate provisions to manage the wide variety of effects that are possible from the rural river. The paragraph 10.2 of my evidence, I state that this is a very unusual statement. For the reason that the lifestyle zone is the most appropriate method in the to enable rural living opportunities within the areas within the rural areas of the district. Mr. Barr has not specifically addressed this in terms of the evidence. In paragraph 10.3 of the evidence, I note that Mr. Barr has inaccurately identified the requested rural lifestyle zone on page 77 of the 42A report. Mr. Barr, in paragraph 26.97 of the faculty evidence, except the location is not accurate, the field is, but it's obvious from the scale of the variable program and overlay that the intent was to illustrate the location of the respective zones sought by the commission and the Lake Mackay Station Commission. With respect, that's not obvious, especially in light of paragraph 10.6 on the evidence. We are raised concerned that it's incorrectly identified the requested rural lifestyle zone being located within a mile, within a mile, and it's not. In paragraph 26.19 of the proposal, Mr. Barr can see that I am correct, but in paragraph 26.20 states that he does not consider the issue was substantive in his recommendation. In my opinion, whether or not the requested lifestyle zone is located within and ONL is fundamental to the assessment of that requested zone. As such, I fail to see how this was not substantive in his recommendation. At paragraph 10.8 of my evidence, I consider that both Mr. Barr and Mr. Nuttall confused the requested zone land with actual development, i.e. subdivisional land and consent application. At paragraph 26.22 of his rebuttal evidence, Mr. Barr states there is no confusion. His point was that because of the limited sensitivity of the land factor to rural change, relying on some NALSOC set, and the large area of the requested lifestyle zone, where buildings could be located this zone with RL, that he considered balancing the relevant and statutory requirements rural zone in the resource consent process provided under the rural zone is the most appropriate because the provisions require greater level of certainty that should be deemed that offered by the rural lifestyle zone. I'm unsure what Mr. Barr means by limited sensitivity. Ms. Nelson got actually paid the site, in her view, may have some capacity to absorb sensitively designed development. The issue of certainty is further commented upon in paragraph 26.24 of Mr. Barr's evidence, where he states that in respect of that in his opinion, there is not enough certainty that the various sorts to be rezoned are those where there is some capacity to absorb change. With respect to Mr. Barber's concern with certainty, I take it paragraph 2.9 of the evidence that the lifestyle zone provision are not out of care. The rural lifestyle zone is highly regulated zone, particularly with respect to subdivision, including identification of platforms, in addition to the imposition of minimum and average development sizes. The PDP acknowledges that many of the lifestyle zones are located in sensitive parts of the landscape, and while residential development is anticipated within the rural lifestyle zone, provisions are included to manage the visual prominence of buildings, control residential density, and generally discover discourage commercial activity. Building location is controlled by building platforms, location standards, and design and manufacturing control of imposed at the time of subdivision. In paragraph 2.10 of my evidence, I also draw attention to the fact that Chapter 3 strategic direction and Chapter 6 landscape policy are also relevant to the development of the lifestyle zone. In particular, I note that Law 6412 states that the landscape categories are applicable to all zones where landscape values are efficient. I understand this meaning that if development of a requested lifestyle zone raises issues with respect to landscape sensitivity, then the application would be assessed in accordance with the relevant landscape classification, which is comprised of course in this case would be the rule landscape sensitivity. Under the proposed subdivision regime for subdivision and identification of building platforms, there would be no difference in terms of certainty between the rural zone and the lifestyle zone. In my opinion, this is our concern that I found. Question 34, I probably don't have to agree that.
Thank you. Hi. For early installation, I think you all advice standards in the legal position.
It does.
Question for you. You brought up a section, in the section, but this is not in it, I think. This is in the creek. Would you agree that it doesn't apply to the fact that it's not so well that it has necessarily no effects on the values of the area?
Yes, I would agree with that.
That's any of the right presumably on the solicited use. It's the way the fish seems to be as a matter of course. In terms of the robustness of the RL zone, in the previous what you need in subdivision here, that the RL zone recognizes and accepts residential activity at the density of the minimum density, namely an average one dwelling per 2 hectares now on average.
Yes.
Is that
if that Manus might be in, that certainly the zoning is discussed that with the objects and policy and support that. The newest rule of life was going to be when the YN station up in Milwaukee had a maximum number of building platforms, which I think is a rule in perhaps 27 somewhere. So certainly the design through the plan has gone the next step from ultra. Thing there is just relying on minimum and average shop sizes, and as actually said, some buildings are larger, but yes, you can have them in there for the dollars and should do some decisions in the time.
So, it's good for this. So, the subject for the same discussion.
I don't know.
in far more Maribor than accepted on the Queenstown side of the bridge. That's the say. So, if you take it a phrase of reference, that you are not the only party to be seated on a table that has these rules, there's some special zones or areas that's going to cause. And it's fair to say if you're representing the wall, to the same efficiency issues about special zones come into play when you get that meeting tweaked to the base RL zone.
Yeah, I definitely think that in terms of the administration of the plan, you know, these past sections you can just ignore what can do with the achievement because they're not relevant. So it's especially the table format that the council derived from the play plan that does make it very easy. And you know, covers a lot of them as well.
I think I said yes, but it does no. So could you just clarify?
Yes. I think that I have no issue with specific rules added as the website of things.
Right. You see, my question was, was there a problem? You said yes, there's not a problem. sorry, but the important thing is I now say to
I might just make an observation, of course, it's a very panel on zoning issues. The breeding has been so important to the rural zone division, but it's the various modifications to my knowledge, suggest that maybe the original zone division should be revisited, but that's just an observation. Anyway, I'll not ask another comment on that. I've only got one question. Vivian, going back to your evidence in chief, in paragraph 5.24 at page 11, you say the requested RL zone is a small portion of the overall area of conservation. That's my understanding, your understanding, that the primary production values of the poppy are likely to be maintained for some time by the requested zone. About that statement and what do you base that conclusion on?
A number of rural households in block litigation that I've dealt with in the last 10 or so years. The one that creeps in my mind obviously is the one at Wayne Station where there's 27 elders within an area of probably 100 hectares of rural lifestyle zone. And each of those residential units actually have a shared interface, and the environmental enhancement that has resulted from that throughout the station, particularly through the water and tree control, is amazing. And so, you know, 15 years ago that station was quite run down. It went through, it was the first station in the Lockheed-Rosen Catcher's review process. It was run down, it was weed infested, it had mouldy tree control. And really that if it was a couple of living before it was a rural lifestyle zone, it really turned around that entire station.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, I'm in a closing station, not why you're not starting.
Before you move on from that topic, to start with the limits, and can explain where the terrace sits in terms of the production of the farm relative to other parts of the farm, so you can get a feel for significance of that terrace to the farm's productive capacity if you would like to do that.
I think pushing that to do that. That might be Kirish's question.
Okay. So I actually run the property, so quite familiar with the value of each panel of the plant. The terrace is only able to be partially irrigated, so it's a good part of the year when it's been dry in, it's probably within the wider water pool that comes down to the lower. That means that they drop from a potential 8-inch stocking to 18 down to 4-6, and how much water you get to it. We've also got the extended what we call the rocky, on the edge of the rocky paddock, large boulders, not ideal for able to be easy development, so got an issue of land that can be farmed at a high rate. And then at the top of the hill, it's got a very small area that's just come down into our more intensive paddock. So the intensive nature of the better soils able to be irrigated, I think it can not have done that.
You're using the closing session as an example, but it's not any to your large equivalent farm management practice that would be of a similar kind. Should I stop by it? Well, Mrs. Williams talked about enhancement on the primary production areas of the public. As a result of rezoning, that's quite an important definition on an economic basis.
Not on an economic basis.
Economic
basis. Yeah, well, similarly in terms of the Wayne example.
You mean Coastburn or Wayne?
Oh, sorry, Coastburn. In terms of the Coastburn station example, they turned around that very uneconomic rundown farm and the subdivision there. Within the Russell area, certainly turn that around, and it's been used as a model example throughout the country in various hearings.
But do I understand you that that would depend on how the rural lifestyle looks?
Yes, it does.
Whether there is any shared ownership of the rural
farm,
but that is not on the table.
Well, it's not on the table, but it's not off the table.
Sure.
So, it has two benefits really. Firstly, in terms of the investment commission, somehow they do it. So, the land area that we actually purchased is small, so it's 75 hectares, and then the balance is held. Some legal way that doesn't trigger OIC approval. And it also
I think in light of the challenge of the pace of change that we've seen that we've talked about more in the here. The proper development they have to be for them the proper value has decreased significantly in the last 4 years. And they're extending that their house era. So this is part of long term planning, trying to know the succession and in running the property, the way that it needs to run in control of the system, even though it's going to be a
bankruptcy.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Can I just make one short part of the submission before we retire? And this goes to the question of the proliferation of the scope rules through the RLD. And my submission to you is Max Harris and the reason why I submit that is when you compare two policies in the past, such as Chapter 6 provisions of the plan, 6315 and 6316. 6315 say avoid urban subdivision and development in rural zones. 6316 say enable rural lifestyle living to apply rural lifestyle zones, rural residential zone plan changes in areas where the landscape can accommodate change. When you look at those two things together, my submission is that compared to the operative plan, the policy framework of the code plan is more aggressively disposed against residential development in the rural zone as a policy. What policy 6316 anticipates is that where you have a location that can accommodate change, then you enable it through the rural lifestyle design and rural lifestyle leaders. So if the council is going to be true to that by enabling the use of that zoning method in areas that can accommodate change, then given the complexity of the landscape in this district, it might follow the game. You will end up with site-specific controls. And that is not something to be afraid of. It's simply inherent in your task of protecting the landscape values. Yes, I'm going with my team tonight to consume beer and watch rugby, but we will also discuss the time tomorrow. I want to see you wherever you can.
Would it be possible to start at 9 o'clock? Do you want another thing? No, that would be fine, Chair. Okay. Just as reappearance.